Welcome to the Closed Minded Podcast, where we read with an open mind in order to close it again on something solid. My guest today is Jake Knuckles. He is a normal guy, a husband and a father of four, and just like me, he happens to love children's books. In fact, based on some of the projects that he's got going on now, which we will discuss, he might actually have me beat in that space. So, Jake, welcome to the Closed Minded Podcast.
Thanks, Seth. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah. So we'll get in a little later into some of the projects that you're involved in. But first, I just wanted to discuss with you a little bit. Just why do you love kids literature? Tell me about your journey into that.
I'd spent a decent amount of time. Yeah, it's a great question. So I think I went through a phase in middle and high school where I needed kind of the shock value of adult books. And in some cases, very adult books, not like inappropriately adult books, but things that made me feel way older than I really was. And I spent a lot of time reading books that didn't do much for my mind or my heart. And it wasn't until a little ways into college where I actually had a teacher say, you know an awful lot about kids books. And as it turned out, that was spot on. I had been reading them without really giving it much thought. And it was all kind of getting stuck in my brain. And I just really enjoyed the difference of, I was getting that same sort of depth of here's an adult topic, but not in all sorts of the scenarios that an adult world would be in, that it was kind of distilled down to its essence and able to be understood without a lot extra. Not to say that the books themselves weren't enough or were, you know, playing too easy on difficult subjects, but that you could get these really true to life topics and true to life issues presented in a way that was not heartbreaking and destructive.
So give me some reasons why kids literature is important, other than I think the primary thing that you just mentioned was the way that it can address themes that are definitely present in adult literature, but without a lot of maybe the heaviness or the troublesome content or the nihilism I think exists a lot in adult fiction. Mm-hmm. Give me some reasons, some other reasons why children's literature is valuable and useful.
Yeah, it, I think it's a fantastically suited medium for getting across big ideas in a way that anyone can understand, to broaden out that idea from just children's literature to just literature in general. Reading children's literature, you get these overarching themes of growing up, growing into adulthood, death, mortality, family issues, you know, genders, et cetera, and on, and being able to come at them from the perspective of with some hope attached to them, I think is what really keeps drawing me back to children's literature. I think that's maybe the thing that gets me the most, is that there's hope attached to all these books. I don't know too many authors where there isn't some amount of hope. Even the Lemony Snicket, A Series of Unfortunate Events, where it's just one bad thing after another. Like, even in those books where the whole premise, the whole idea behind them is awful things continue to happen to orphans, which in and of itself is awful. There's always these elements of family and perseverance and hope that there's this next thing will put another piece into this puzzle. And so I think that's the biggest thing for me, is that being able to read books where there is a perspective of hope keeps me coming back to these books, I learn about different cultures and I learn about different types of people and different places, but it's all couched in that realm of here's what the character or the author is hoping for out in front of them.
So why do you think that that variable is omnipresent throughout children's literature? Do you think is it because the audience won't let authors get away with doing it otherwise? Like the readership would dry up if you were getting, you know, this dark, nihilistic, no hope, bleak type of quote unquote realist stories that we see so much in adult fiction, and kids just, you know, either can't or won't stand for that?
I think there's a certain amount of where authors that are writing for children look at their audience and say, this is what we used to be. We need to treat them as if their life is in front of them, as opposed to writing for an audience where any number of years, a significant number of years, are already behind them. We look at our kids and we hope for them into the future. You're going to have a chance to fill in the blank, you know, be president, lead this group or that group, be a productive member in society, all the way down to just the basic, like you'll be able to pay your bills, all of those levels. And we hope for them. And so in order to write for kids, you can't write the same sort of nihilistic life is meaningless, because that's not the message that anyone wants to teach to their children.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. And I guess, yeah, kids are just not going to receive that well. They're, you know, they're not going to overlook that sort of content at that age, you know, just because the action is good, I guess, or because it's exciting.
Right.
So do you think that writing literature for kids that sort of, you know, hits all those components is a lot more difficult to accomplish and to do well?
I genuinely do, because I think it can come off smacking of too much morals. Like you're writing with a very specific motive or a very specific, like, pithy phrase. It's very easy to do that. There's thousands of books published every year that are solely intended to teach you something. And the books that I think that stay with us the most are the ones that do have that in there, that are woven through the story, but the writing brings us to that point as opposed to beating you over the head with it at every step of the way. You know, you don't want the parent in the story to say, whatever, make your bed before breakfast. You want that to be the growth of the – that's a really poor example, but you want that to be the growth of the character that you're following. Get to the end and, wow, look at that. They did it.
Yeah. Tell me if you agree with this. I would say that there are sort of two pieces to this. There's the actual, you know, the execution, the ability of an author to, you know, tell a story without having to do a lot of moralizing or, you know, overt instruction. So there's that piece of it. But then there's also just, I don't know if the term for it is voice or just the ability to, you know, what you had said earlier, sort of distill down fundamental truths about reality and experience and love and, you know, enemies and just all of these things, all these themes and motifs that show up in books everywhere. But, you know, in an adult fiction, you know, you can wrap it up in, you know, whether it's violence or just a bleak outlook, you really have to translate it into something that is a more distilled, pure, innocent communication of those truths, which I think is very difficult to do, which is why, you know, we've got a relatively short list of sort of the best throughout, you know, the last 150, 200 years of children's literature. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The ones that do it best are, you know, any random person is going to list off some of those that have done it best over the years, that do it better than anybody else, that don't smash you over the face with it.
Tell me about what your family culture is like when it comes to reading great books and reading aloud, and then you've got four kids. Tell me what that looks like.
We do a lot of reading aloud. That's one of the things that my wife talks about a lot. We homeschool our four kids, and one of the things that she talks about a lot is that, yes, we'll do school along the way, along the daytime. But so much of our just basic and fundamental learning comes from sitting on the couch reading books together. Nonfiction, you know, any type of other fiction story, picture book, chapter book. We constantly have a read aloud going. Right now we're reading Swiss Family Robinson. We've read everything from, you know, fluffy stuff. I'm trying to think of the last one that was maybe a little less than stellar, The Castle in the Attic.
Yes.
Which I loved as a kid. I got to the end and didn't feel like it was, you know, one of those that I would hold up on the tip top pedestal, but I had great memories of it as a kid. All the way to, you know, we read The Hobbit with the kids. We've read through the Narnia Chronicles, and those are those pinnacle novels that every kid needs to have in their book bank. And so our culture at home is books are everywhere. We have no space left for books, and we're constantly shuffling big crates out to the, you know, out to our storage in the attic, and shuffling new ones in and trying to figure out, okay, well, if we move that wall out over there, we could put another bookshelf in. Maybe we could just get a smaller couch, but that won't fit us all. So no, our even the organization of our house revolves around books.
That's great. So with four, and I'm sure, you know, you've got limited time. Are you, do you manage to read to every kid individually, or are you guys all grouped around one book together, regardless of the age span?
We have a family read aloud. So in this case, Swiss Family Robinson, and there are times when it's more meant for the older kids. You know, my oldest is 10, and then almost 8, and 5, and 3. And the 5-year-old can hang for most of the time if there are short chapters and if it's really interesting to him. So Swiss Family Robinson kind of walks that weird line of some chapters he's gone and other chapters he's totally there, wide-eyed. I want to build a treehouse too. The 3-year-old, we read so much during the daytime that, like, we're constantly reading to them. My wife or I read to the two youngest before they go to bed at night. In addition to whatever chapter we've read, sometimes at the dinner table, sometimes after the dinner table, we gather at the couch and read our chapter book. So it's all over the map, but yes, pretty much everybody gets read to, typically not individually.
How often do you abandon something after you've started, either because, you know, there was content that you weren't expecting, or somebody gets scared, or everybody's bored, or for whatever reason?
That's a good question. We read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory aloud probably 3 years ago, but it was 2 years before then that I was really pushing to read it, and got through the first maybe 2 chapters, and there was a little bit much on the sarcasm and name calling and things. And that was at the point where, you know, kids were young enough, I could pull back and say, all right, well, it's not a book for you guys right now. To be totally honest, that's the only one that I can think of where we decided to back off on it. We read, The Five Little Peppers and How They Grew.
Is that good?
It is written very strange. Like, the, it's not Yoda writing, but there are times when it's like she wrote a great sentence and then chopped it in half and put the back half at the front and the front half at the back.
Huh.
So it was good, but that was one that both my wife and I looked at each other and just went, we just got to get through it. We just got to do it. We just got to do it. Somehow we got to do it. And we did. We managed to get through it, but it took us a long time. So no, we typically don't abandon. Most of the time it's because I've already read the book. And as far as content goes, I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, that's funny. I picked up The Peppers and How They Grew a while ago, and it's just I pick up more books than we ever get to. And so just because I pick it up doesn't mean that we'll end up reading it aloud, or at least I will end up reading it aloud. Somebody might pick it up and read it, but for whatever reason, it's been on my radar for a while. I don't know where I heard it of it. I don't know how it got on my list, but it's there and I've been curious about it.
It's on a lot of those, like, if you're a homeschooling family, like one of those classic novels that you just have to read. And I'm here to say that as a homeschooling dad, it's not.
Way to buck the trend.
Yeah, I don't doubt that it's a great book for some people. It was not for my family.
Yeah, it's funny you brought up Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Roald Dahl was genuinely my absolute favorite author as a kid. I just devoured everything that he wrote. And it was just his macabre sense of humor and, oh man, so much fun. And then encountering him as an adult, it's like a completely different experience. And part of me is should I be reading this to my child? I don't know about this.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. It's very strange. Like I remember in probably third, fourth, fifth grade, it was just anything that I could find of his, Roald Dahl's Revolting Rhymes and The Twits and George's Marvelous Medicine and The Witches. And
oh yeah, The Witches. I got plenty of, should you be reading that? You know, sort of questions.
And as a parent now, I go, would I let my oldest, she's like third, fourth grade age, would I let her get that? I don't know.
Yeah.
What were my parents doing?
Yeah. And then have you ever read any of his adult fiction?
Yeah.
Some of that is, I mean, it's crazy. It's the exact same voice. It's just much more adult content. We won't address any of that on this podcast.
I think that's a good choice.
I remember, I think the one that I read aloud to my oldest, who is 10 now, but I read it to him, I don't know, he was maybe 8 or 9, was one of my favorites as a kid, was Danny the Champion of the World.
Oh my word.
And, I read it so many times and it just had so much delight for me. And Dahl just has this really uncanny way of just triggering these giddy emotions of enjoying, whether it's these plot twists and these really creative, you know, events that occur, or if it's because, you know, somebody sticks it to the man, whether it's the, you know, whoever the authority figure is, which I'm sure, you know, as a parent, it's a completely different experience. But man, as a kid, you really enjoyed participating in, you know, people getting their just desserts and, you know, the really creative ways that the bad guys would get punished or, you know, whatever, getting their comeuppance. It was so much fun. But I remember reading it to him and getting to the ending and it's like, wait, this whole thing is like a celebration of poaching and theft. And I mean, the villain is a villain, but it doesn't justify trespassing and thievery and lying. And what do you do with this? It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he convinced the rest of the town to kind of go in on it with him and it wasn't a big deal. And
I'm still not quite sure what to do with all of that. We'll see.
Yep. I think the nice thing is that kids can get the fun behind it. Like, I don't know that anybody finished reading Danny Champion of the World and was like, you know what? I'm going to go find some pheasants. Is there a rich guy around here I can steal from? No, but instead they're looking at it as like, this person was hilarious and that person was just perfect. And Danny's dad is amazing. And, that's, I think, the nice thing too about so many of his books is that even though there's so much mischief in it, that what kids see is, you know, the characters and the joy and the fun.
It doesn't necessarily have to undermine, you know, a moral system that you're teaching your kids.
Yep.
Yeah. That's an interesting tension though.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So tell me about this project that you've got going, Stuff of Stories. Give me the background on that and what's going on there.
In its basic sense, it is a book recommendation service. I wanted to have something where I could interact with children's books and tell other people about children's books, but have it not be this like career change for me. I work for a local nonprofit doing home repairs and energy efficiency type things. And I just didn't have time to do the big grandiose ideas that I really wanted. I started this little scavenger hunt around town where I built a whole bunch of boxes, put writing prompts in them, and the people were supposed to find the boxes and write the writing prompts and send them to me, and I would publish them. And it just, like, the boxes got stolen. Nobody was writing them in anymore. I wasn't going to be able to go around and make sure that the little cards were in at these 10 different places all over Whatcom County. It was a great idea that just couldn't. I just didn't have the time for.
It's like geocaching in the pre-GPS age.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's a great idea, though.
It was a super fun idea. It just wasn't all the way there yet. Maybe someday. But this has come out of I'm constantly pushing books on people. And whenever I see a book, even if I have two or three copies of, I can think of two or three people I would give a copy of the book to. And it was a way to kind of allow myself some space to write up some book lists and hand them out and keep reading all the books that I possibly could to kind of expand my world of book lists or of book recommendations that I could do, and then continue to pass out books to whoever I can. And so what it is a website where there is kind of a basic explanation at the top. Tell me what your kid likes. I'll recommend some books. And there's a submission form. You put in your name and email address and kind of a little bit of a description of what you're hoping to get. Whether it's, I've done everything from, I had a friend of mine say 9, 6, 5, and 4. And that was all the information I got. It's like, okay, well, I've got a 9-year-old, a 6-year-old, and I made a book list for him. Everything from that to, we just finished reading all of Barbara Cooney's books and my kids like Harry Potter and they're these ages and we want nothing that, would fall under the category of whatever, too violent. And so then I work up a book list. I take a week or so and go through my own book lists and go through books that I have read and put together, write my own little summary specifically geared towards that child. And put in little pictures of each of the books, book covers, and the criteria that was given to me, and then turn it into a PDF and email it back. It's a free service, and it's just super fun. It allows me to recommend books to whoever and wherever and keep pushing books on people all over. Yeah.
What kind of feedback have you gotten, if any?
It's all been positive. I think mostly because it's finally hit that point where it's not just my friends or people close to me. So it's now moving out. I've had a few recently from California and Arizona and friends of friends of friends sort of a thing. All the feedback has been really positive. Like, we haven't even heard of these 6 books. And I think if I can get 50% of my list that is something they've never heard of before, I feel like I'm really succeeding. There's little caveats in there. Like, if you've read all of these books, please tell me and I'll make another list for you. I'm going to keep all these lists and eventually put them on the website so other people can use them. But no, just let me know what you need. And it's been really positive so far. It's been kind of fun to hear people say, we're really excited to read these books.
That's great. Well, we will make sure and link to that on the show notes page, which it's closemindedpodcast.com/4. And we'll also have links to all the books that were mentioned on this episode. But tell me about some of your all-time favorite personal recommendations. What have you given out to people the most?
A Wrinkle in Time is always, I don't know why it's number one, but it's number one. Like, there are books that I would rank over A Wrinkle in Time, but that's number one. Maybe it's just because I find it everywhere in free bins and at, book sales for 25 cents. And, A Wrinkle in Time I give to everybody. I've got a few copies of OK for Now by Gary Schmidt. It's a great middle grade reader, kind of mixes baseball and middle school and the Audubon Book of Birds. And it will make you want to find a copy. I found two copies of Audubon's Book of Birds, just copies, you know, smaller versions. And so that's one. The Book Thief, even though it was like super popular national bestseller, it's always on the most read books list and all that sort of stuff. It really lives up to it. It's a remarkable book. Trying to give you at least one more. Oh, I've been giving people Some Kind of Courage recently by an author from Eastern Washington by Dan Gemeinhart. It's a crazy spelling. It's actually not that crazy now that I think about it. But it takes place in Eastern Washington during kind of pioneering days. And it's a boy who has to go and get his beloved horse back. And it is just beautiful, just absolutely beautiful.
Great. I have not heard of that one. I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
That's great. Well, cool. I think we're getting close to wrapping up here. But I thought one thing that might be fun to do is to just go through a list of random books and or art authors that I've come up with of stuff that's been either impactful to me as a kid or in recent years, or stuff that my kids have enjoyed, et cetera. And, yeah. This by no means is exhaustive. It's just sort of what I bulleted, off the top of my head. Let me know, if any of these are, you know, in your top, if you hate them, if you love them, you know, if they trigger any memories or experiences.
Yeah.
I just thought it would be fun to kind of go through this. So you had already mentioned Narnia and Lord of the Rings. Have you read The Hobbit to your kids?
Yes.
That is a classic. That's fantastic. One of my all-time favorites.
Yep. It's a great read aloud too.
What about Harry Potter?
I love Harry Potter. I'm a big Harry Potter fan. Haven't read it to the kids yet. We're getting close. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of kind of following him along in the equivalent age category. And my eldest is getting close. So I'm really excited to open that. We've kind of been telling little stories like, oh, that reminds me about this part in this book. And then we'll tell little stories. So sometimes the kids are like, can we have another Harry Potter story? And, so we'll tell them another little fun part of whatever we can remember.
Have you seen the, I think the Jim Kay illustrated versions that have come out?
They're gorgeous.
Oh, they are really gorgeous. Yeah. And they're amazing. He's only through book three so far. Book three came out in the fall and he's doing one a year until they're done. But those are fantastic. I'm hoping to own all of those at some point.
Yeah. Well, maybe that'll be the sort of thing where when we start reading it aloud to my eldest, we'll buy them one at a time.
Yeah, the tricky thing with that series is that, you know, obviously there are seven and, you know, the age at which they're ready to start book one is definitely not the age that they're ready to finish book seven, but they're so good that you just want to keep going. It's like, how do you spread these out over so many years? And, and then I feel like I'm also fighting against, I'm just waiting for the shoe to drop of, cause everybody knows the stories now, you know, it's not a secret anymore. And I'm sort of always in anticipation of somebody giving, you know, major plot points away to my kids. It's like, we've got cousins who have finished them. And the last time we don't live anywhere near them, but we get together with them every year or so. And the last time we were together, I said to all the kids and also to their parents, I was like, look, seriously, guys, do not let your kids talk about Harry Potter to my children, or I will be really angry.
Seriously. Oh, man. There's nothing worse.
Yep. So I'm hoping that we can sort of find that balance between getting them done as soon as we can, but not getting ahead of them in terms of maturity and not getting plot points given away.
Yep, for sure.
Here's one that's pretty recent this author's written a handful of sort of middle grade fiction recently. I've only read this one, The Clockwork Three by Matthew J. Kirby. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, he wrote Icefall. Is that?
Yeah, it's Ice something. Did you read
I
that?
Think it's, I read Icefall. I have not read The Clockwork Three.
I think I maybe started Icefall and either I didn't get into it or I just had other things that crowded it out. For whatever reason, it didn't grip me right away.
Okay.
But Clockwork 3, I just adored. It was one of those that managed to capture the experience of music and and being a musician and engaging in, you know, the creative artistry of composition enjoying here. Like, that's really difficult to capture because A, you have to understand it yourself and not everybody does. And then to be able to communicate it at all, and then to be able to communicate it in a middle grade novel, I just was really impressed by
No kidding. Okay. I just put that on my list. I'll check it out.
N.D. Wilson. I mean, I'm sure you're a fan of him.
I'm a big N.D. Wilson fan. Yeah. I couldn't be more excited. I would assume, I think he's just finished up the third Outlaws of Time book.
He has,
I would assume that the fourth and final Ashtown Burials book is coming sometime soon. And I could not be more excited. I just love his stuff. I love how he weaves. He weaves a good story that fit the bill for all the things that I used to love as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then the writing is just, he's one of those guys from like, just stop, man. You're just, and you make movies. Oh, you make movies too. Great. Oh, okay. Yeah. You're amazing at two things. That's great. Good for you.
And he manages to write really great adult nonfiction as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No kidding.
Yep. Solid stuff. Okay. So we're going to go back about 100 years. Wind in the Willows.
You know, I have not read Wind in the Willows. That was really hard for me to say. I don't know if you could catch that there, but as a kid's lit guy, getting through of being able to say, haven't read that. Yeah, I know. I started on multiple occasions. To be honest, too, I was spoiled on the Disney animated 30-minute to the extent where I loved that. I was not introduced to the book before I saw that. And so I think I would love the book. I genuinely do.
See, that's interesting. I never saw any of the film or TV production of it, any of that media.
Yeah.
I was aware of it. I knew that there was a copy in the bookshelf growing up, but I never read it. I kind of knew there was a picture of a mole and a rat and a badger, and that's basically it. Didn't know anything about it. And then I didn't read it until, I mean, I was in my late 20s. And I don't know why, but all of it, I checked it out at the library and it had the most beautiful illustrations and I just adored it.
Mm.
Like it's in my top five.
Wow.
So good. And I can't even really describe it. Like I've started reading it out loud to the kids just in the last couple of weeks. And my wife has commented like, she's like, I know this is one of your favorite books ever, but I've just kind of been listening in the background. I don't understand why you love it so much.
Maybe this is the reason why I've started it a couple times and gone, well, I'll just watch the movie again. But I'm gonna push through. I'm gonna give it a try.
Yeah, I just adored it. And then what's been really fun in the last few years, or you know, since I mean, I've probably read it 6 or 7 times now.
Yeah.
There have been a handful of sequels written by a few different authors, which, you know, sometimes that is a recipe for disaster and sometimes it succeeds. And especially with a book like Wind in the Willows, you know, that's pretty gutsy to even, you know, try to do that with something that's just canon for being a classic. But they're really good. I found 3 different authors who have written sequels of various kinds to Wind in the Willows. And I've enjoyed them all. So I'm in the middle of one right now. Lloyd Alexander.
I just finished rereading because I'm reading through all the Newbery Award winners. Mm-hmm. I just finished rereading The High King, separate from all the other books, because somehow he won the Newbery for the last book in the Prydain Chronicles. And that kind of surprised me. But I love those.
Me too.
I just love them. Like knowing all the background it just made the book even better to read. I knew it was the fifth one. I knew I wasn't going to catch all that other backstory and whatnot, but all the characters that came in, I was a basket case crying about this, laughing about that, because I knew all the back. It's just so good.
That's great. Yeah, those are some of my favorites too.
Yep.
Susan Cooper.
I have not read Susan Cooper. She's the Gray King, The Dark is Rising.
Dark is Rising, yeah.
Yeah, no, I have not.
I'm in the middle of those right now with my 10-year-old, and he's really enjoying them. And I mean, I read them as a kid. I reread them, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. And then for some reason, they popped into my head, and I was like, I think it's time for me to read these to you. And he's been really enjoying those.
Awesome.
We did have to switch to, I think I read the first three. Well, we listened to the first one on a road trip. And then the next two I read aloud. And now for book four and book five, there's so much Welsh in them.
Oh, sure.
That I'm like, there's no way that I can even attempt to pronounce all of this. I'm just going to butcher it and destroy a beautiful language. So we'll just get the audiobook.
Yep. No, that's a great way to go. That's a great way to go. I think that, Taran Wanderer of the Prydain books, number four. I think because he goes to so many different places as he wanders, that's the one that I would almost insist on being read aloud, because there's so much stuff in there. Some of the other ones you can kind of get, but there's too much going on there.
Yeah. Redwall.
I read all of those. I bought my dad for Christmas one year because I wanted it, the book Salamandastron. and it was the most recent one out at the time, and I wanted it really bad, and I couldn't figure out a way to get it. So I bought it as a Christmas present for my dad. And,
that's brilliant.
And he opened it and was like, "Oh, I haven't read any of these books." I'm like, "Oh, I'll read it and I'll tell you how it is." I felt kind of bad afterwards, because you could see on his face that he knew what was up. He could see what was going on.
All right. Going old school again. George MacDonald.
Read some George MacDonald. Yeah. I've read, we listened with the kids at the back of the North Wind.
Mm-hmm.
Recently.
Isn't that beautiful?
It's beautiful. And we got to the end, and we got to the end, and they were like, "Yeah, that's cool." But both Talia and I, sitting in the front seat of the car, looked at each other and were like, oh, geez. Oh, what? And I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but that was our response to that book.
Yeah.
And no, he's got, man.
It's heartbreaking, but it's beautiful.
It is.
Yeah.
It totally is. But yeah, his writing.
The Princess and the Goblin is also really great.
Talia read that. That's one of our pastor at our church's favorite books. He actually will reference The Princess and the Goblin in his sermon sometimes, which I think is great.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's great. Andrew Peterson.
Love Andrew Peterson. He's one of those, fall in the same category as N.D. Wilson, where there's just too much that he's good at.
He does everything, yeah.
Yeah, we followed him for his music since forever ago. And started writing the books. You know, the first one was, you could kind of see him getting his feet under him. And then North or Be Eaten, you really saw him fleshing out characters. And then Monster in the Hollows. And it just took off. You could see him really catch his stride.
Yeah. I read the first two this was probably 10 years ago, maybe 9 years ago, when book two came out, North or Be Eaten. And I managed to get a review copy from the publisher.
Yeah. Awesome.
And got it delivered. And then I didn't realize at the time that it was book two. And I was like, oh, well, shoot, I gotta go read book one. So I read book one and then read book two so that I could review it. And then over time, we've accumulated the rest of them. And my wife read them all aloud to my eldest. And so she's gone all the way through them, and she was like in tears at the end, weeping about it. And I still have yet to finish them. I haven't gotten past book two, so I need to get on that.
Oh, dude. Yeah, you'll be done. It's so good. Yeah.
Do you guys do any graphic novels? Have you done any of that stuff?
Not with the kids.
They're not as conducive to read alouds. Like, I won't read them to my kids. I'm like, look, you can read them yourself, but I'm not going to try and do this. It's too crazy. It's too hard.
Absolutely. One of my favorite authors who does graphic novels that are really good for like my kids' age, 10 and really even the 8-year-old could go through it, is Matt Phelan. He's done A Storm in the Barn, which is one of his first ones, Depression era, Little Bit of Magic, Family Ties, and very limited text. And let's see, what else did he do? He did Around the World, which kind of chronicled a few different people's attempts to go around the world. I'm blanking on the guy's name right now. But anyways, Matt Phelan, he also did one called Bluffton about Buster Keaton, and another one most recently called Snow White. And it's kind of a retelling of the Snow White story, but in the Bronx back in the gangster days.
Oh, wow.
And really limited color palettes. And it's pretty awesome.
Hmm. Yeah, there were two that occurred to me right off the top of my head in that space. Are you aware of the Amulet series?
Yep. I love the Amulet series.
My two oldest have gone through all of those, and I have as well, just because they're so much fun and they're so quick. And then I just discovered I think there's four of them out right now, and I'm blanking on the author's name, but the name of the series is Rust.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah,
those are really fun too. Sort of a kind of a steampunk sepia toned artwork.
Yep.
Post-war depression era type.
It's very interesting. It's like post-apocalyptic almost, but it fits in that Dust Bowl side of things.
Yeah, Dust Bowl. There you go. Yes, that's good. We're enjoying those.
Good.
We'll hit a few more. Hank the Cow Dog. Have you done any of those?
Hank the Cow Dog. Yep. Read through lots of Hank the Cow. Those are just those, you know, that file those under like some of the early Beverly Cleary readers and,
yes.
Books that you just know you're going to be smiling all the way through it.
Yeah.
I just love those.
Yep. Artemis Fowl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. I dig Owen. I think that's how they pronounce it, actually. Owen Colfer.
Is that how you say his name? I guess I've never heard it pronounced. I think I say it Oin in my mind, but I don't know what's right.
Oh, that's how I did too. And I think that somebody told me the other day, not the other day. I think I looked it up once and it's pronounced Owen.
Here's one that it may or may not be off the beaten path. It was one of those random times where I was just walking through the aisles at the library and just pulled something off the shelf because it looked interesting. And I was like, oh, I'll read this. And I don't know anything else about it or the author. I've never met anybody else who's read it. It's called The Various by Steve, I don't know how you say his name, Aguarde, something like that. You've never heard of it? It's a trilogy,
no.
I think. And it's I've only read the first one, and it's about this girl who, she goes to live like with I don't know if it's extended family on like a farm out in the country somewhere, and she discovers a society of basically fairy type creatures.
Okay.
in the woods, and and they're under threat from something, and I can't remember what. It's really interesting. It's really good. I really liked it. It had pretty whimsical. I appreciated the voice of it, and it was a really good story.
I'll have to check it out.
Richard Peck.
I do like Richard Peck. Yeah. I tried writing a set of short, cause he does it in that, like, each chapter is almost a standalone.
Yeah.
Vignette. That's the word that I'm looking for.
Or it's episodic.
Yeah, very much so.
Which that's sort of a pejorative, and I don't mean it to be.
No, but I think we get how you're describing it. That's it's definitely a cool way to write a book where you can have these individual chapters. You can almost pick it up individually.
Yeah.
Kind of like supposedly The High King, even though I don't really believe that so much, that it could be taken as an individual novel. But Lloyd Alexander believed that it could. Anyways, I'm referencing back a little too far, but yeah, I like Richard Peck stuff a lot. A Long Way from Chicago.
Yeah.
Kind of blew my mind.
They're hilarious. Just the stories about these kids and their grandmother is just, they're just hilarious.
Completely.
All right, just a couple more and then we'll wrap it up. These are two that I have not read, but my wife is in the middle of the second one and just really likes the voice of the author. And it's The War That Saved My Life and The War I Finally Won.
Yeah, I read The War That Saved My Life and loved it. I have not read the follow-up.
The War I Finally Won.
The War I Finally Won, yeah. I know that my father read both of them and didn't like the second one as much. He said it was hard to get into and it took me a little while. That doesn't mean that it's not good by any way, shape, or means, but yeah, no, I loved the first one. Loved the first one.
Yeah. Cool. Well, good. That might push it up on my list then, because I've wanted to get to it. All right, one more, because I noticed this on your Goodreads, and this was one of my all-time favorites as a kid. Carry On, Mr. I don't know if it's Bowditch or Bowditch or whatever.
I say Mr. Bowditch.
Me too.
Because that's a little easier, I guess, just rolls off the tongue a little bit. But yeah, no, I'm in the middle of reading it right now. I've got it on the table. It's right there.
Now, have you read it before?
No, I haven't. No. Counted alongside there's a few of the other more recent Newbery Award books that I've read that I felt like I should have read. Rifles for Wadey.
I'm reading that one right now because I saw it showed up on your feed.
It's really good. And there was another one, another war, or Johnny Tremaine I read as a kid, but hadn't read it again until earlier this year. And just love it. Just loved it. And Carry On, Mr. Bowditch, I just am so thoroughly enjoying.
Yeah. Yeah, I reread it again as an adult a couple of years ago and enjoyed it just as much. I just have all of these emotional memories from reading it as a kid. Like,
yeah,
there's so much sadness in that story, but it's beautiful. And I just remember it being, it just impacted me really strongly when I read it as a kid. Such a good book.
Yeah. I mean, not to tie it up too neatly, but looking, you know, going back to where we started talking tonight about just deep issues distilled into small, when, you know, different characters, you know, I guess they die. I'm not going to tell you who, but it handles it in such a way where you're able to mourn and go through all the typical emotions, but then be able to move forward. And so you watch Nat Bowditch go through all of these things as he deals with the emotions of losing someone, being sad, being angry, being that confused, I don't know what to do. And then realizing that, no, I'm not going to live there. I'm going to move myself forward. It's beautiful. And it's that perfect distillation down to, here's your life. This is what, you know, you're going to have these moments of people coming in and going.
Yeah, I think that it's a perfect encapsulation of just the value that literature can bring to somebody's life, whether it's, you know, an inexperienced in the world child or an adult who still wants to, you know, get the kind of the distillation of a lot of those truths in a kid's novel. And, you know, at different times I see criticism about reading fiction or reading literature as being escapism. And that just drives me crazy because I think it's the exact opposite. There's so much to learn both as an adult and as a child through literature, good literature, especially kids literature, that it's the exact opposite of escapism. There's so much value and worth in reading these books and immersing yourselves in these stories. Just the moral training that can come about. And I don't mean, you know, didactic type of, you know, training, but, you know, genuine immersion in people's stories and truths. And, I'm so glad that we have such a wealth of great novels available to us. It's so exciting.
No kidding. It really is. It's great
to be able to impart that to our kids and enjoy books again through them is another one of the best parts of being a parent.
It totally is. It totally is.
All right. Well, I think it's about time to wrap it up. For anybody listening, you can get links to all or most of the books that we mentioned today on the show notes page. Again, it's closemindedpodcast.com/4. And I will also link to Jake's website, which is Stuff of Stories. And please do go visit the site, fill out the form to get a free book list that he will customize for you or for your kids. He loves to recommend books to people, so let him. Jake, I'd love to have you back sometime. Maybe we can do a deeper dive into a particular book or an author's corpus of work, and that would be a lot of fun. But thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Oh, man, I think that would be fantastic, and absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
All right, everybody, that's it for episode 4 of the Closed Minded Podcast. Remember to read widely and with an open mind. See you next time.
I wish upon you true, and all you feel is doubt. I hope you know that an open mind still knows when to shut things out. I wish upon you a break that will always rise above, but most of all, I